What is good, everyone, and welcome back to the Nostalgia for Soulja podcast. My name is Taylor, aka Nostalgia. Joining me is As Told by Zoe. Welcome back, brother.
It's good to be back.
Nice to see you. Also joining me is K Likes Everything. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. We're about to enter into like some of my favorite media ever, so it's gonna be a good day.
Yes. Before I introduce this topic, Zoe has not been on the podcast the past 2 weeks, and has listened back to the podcast episodes as we and Kayla have been recording and putting them out. And according to him, is not very happy with one of our episodes, our most recent one, where we talk about our March Madness, our Moe Madness bracket.
Moe Madness,
because I genuinely thought I was going to be on the pod last week, but weddings, you know how that goes. And I got a medal from the cruise I was on.
Whoa.
Because we won a dodgeball game.
Oh my fucking God.
We got to the Bahamas the second day. And we woke up too late. Don't worry, we experienced the islands the first day. The second day we woke up too late and we're like, eh. And then we found out there was a dodgeball game and we played. And the other team was being weird and they were cheating. And we won anyway.
Through the power of friendship?
Actually, yes.
See?
Because our team was just our friends. And the other team was like people that they had to pick together.
Pull together.
Yeah.
But yeah,
what was the average age range? Were they like y'all's age or older?
It was no. It was specifically adult dodgeball.
Okay,
because they didn't.
It was like I thought you were just like just absolutely
exactly
nailing like 12-year-olds in the court.
It was like 16 and up.
Okay,
that's funny.
The oldest guy there was like 40.
Okay,
but yeah, that was fun. And the wedding last week, Kayla. You are so lucky I wasn't there.
Literally, I could not have gone through last week's episode without like an ulcer if you had been there.
Because I'm looking at the bracket now. Toru. Yeah. Which is it, Toru Honda?
Yes.
Okay, because I was about to say, if it was fucking Toru from Dragon Maid.
No, I would have
killed somebody.
Also, I didn't make the list. AI did. So,
but I think Toru Honda is fine.
Toru Honda is great.
I don't watch the show. I would have picked Kaguya, but I wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. Now, I wouldn't have let Nami go past the first battle.
Really?
That's just really? Me. Now, Marin wouldn't have gone past round two because she was going up against Usagi.
Yeah.
But this is what I was saying when I was listening to the podcast. I love Nami. I do love Nami. And yes, there are people on Twitter where like, she's not important. She is. She literally is the navigator. Also, even if she didn't do anything on the crew, Luffy loves her. So she is important.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
But Marin is the story. Marin is the story.
Yeah.
She just is. And fucking Nami's whole thing is being like kind of sometimes one of the guys, sometimes one of the girls. Like she kind of rotates. I don't know. I feel like Marin's cuter.
I feel like Nami pulls Usopp into being one of the girls.
That happens all the time.
One of the guys. Usopp is her bestie. Without Marin, the show wouldn't have happened. Right? Like, if there's no one that we need to make cosplay for, then there's no show.
Someone that makes Gojo feel good about himself.
Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know. I felt like it was hard because Taylor and I were trying to see, like, okay, what are we ranking these people on? And sometimes it was about, like, their fighting styles. Sometimes it was about their relation to the story. Sometimes it was about their relevance to the overall plot. It really just depended, and I just felt in that moment that Nami should have moved forward. And I think that you agreed with me I don't even think we fought on that one.
Moe means, but like moe is another word for cute, no?
Yes, yeah. But we just did that because it matched with madness.
Yeah.
It was like, really, it was like a rhyming scale thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Because yeah, we've already ranked women on their looks before.
Yeah, and I was like, this is a tough one to do twice. You know what I'm
yeah
saying?
I agree with Usagi. It doesn't matter what we were ranking on. I just feel like in this list and in most lists, she's number one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Nezuko going around two makes sense because I don't like anyone from Urza's from Fairy Tale or High School?
Fairy Tale.
Fairy Tale. Yeah,
I don't like Fairy Tale.
Me neither.
So she would have gone, but I don't know. There's some Nezuko as a character is such a small little bright ray of sunshine.
Yeah.
She is surrounded by a darkness. that I can't look past because I am so chronically online.
Right.
That it hurts every time. The first time I saw her turn into like the adult demon, I was like, oh, right. Interesting. And then I go on Twitter and everyone's like, ooh. So I'm like,
yeah, it's right. Nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess I'm just not, I don't have a Twitter, so I'm not chronically online enough. And I just see her for the character that she is. And she is a little ball of sunshine in that show. Like, I don't know. She just makes everyone happy and bright. Like, what's the name of the girl with the green and pink hair? Mitsuri? No.
Mitsuri.
It is in Mitsuri? Mitsuri? Okay. So, like, when they go visit Mitsuri in, like, the other village, and they're, like, taking a little, like, hot springs baths together and, like, holding hands while they're walking, and she's like, oh, my God, Nezuko, you make me so happy. I'm just like, it's just a baby. It's just a baby. And I love her. But I get what you guys are talking about. I get what you guys are saying. Winry could have perhaps moved forward in that round because I do love her. But
yeah, it's just it was kind of hard to
by
like
what I said.
Yeah, it was kind of hard to just qualify and put them into certain like types. And so, like when I basically was like, okay, I'm gonna use ChatGPT to give me all of like some very 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 popular.
Right.
Women characters in anime, right? And I was like, okay, I'm just going to match them up by what we could potentially do in terms of a criteria. And it just didn't work out like that. So, like,
we can build it better, faster, stronger another day.
Next
like,
time.
A24 came out with like a list of like their movies and they based them off of like four quadrants of categories.
Yeah.
So there could be like the loving, kind category, like very shoujo-esque, like, if we believe in our dreams, the power is ours, pink glitter blood. Then we can have like the female characters that actually fight in another quadrant and like their fighting styles, then some smarts, and then overall vibe, you know? And that we could do that and that would be fun.
Yes, that'd probably be a little bit more effective. But then like
yes.
And then as we get into like later rounds, it's obviously it's like a shoujo versus
Usagi.
A fighting girl.
No, at the end of the day, it's Usagi because she's both.
She's everything.
She's everything, but we got to see what can get close. You know,
yeah.
I
They're
I would
fighting
love
for second place.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we need to do. Maybe we keep her off the list, and we're just like, this is the list without Usagi present.
Yeah,
because we know she'd already get first. That'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fine. all right. So today I want to introduce the topic of today's podcast. And I want to tell the listeners, welcome to our 10-part series, which I'm calling Miyazaki Magic. We are going through 10 of Hayao Miyazaki's movies and giving our reviews, some analytical takes, and some like overall thoughts on the different movies that we watched. So we're starting today with Princess Mononoke. Mm-hmm. And I'll say that personally speaking, in terms of like going back into Ghibli movies in general, like this is something that like I've always wanted to do. It's been on my list of like topic ideas to do Ghibli or like Miyazaki like episode series. We just kind of go through them because I've only ever seen Spirited Away, and it was like a situation where I didn't watch it of my own accord. It was like I was in like seventh grade, and it was like the last two or three days of school, so we just watched a bunch of movies, and my teacher just puts on Spirited Away, and I didn't even realize like what kind of movie it was. I was just kind of watching it. And so like that's my only real like experience with like Ghibli movies, is just like randomly seeing it during the school day.
That was the only time you've seen it?
Yeah.
Wait, you haven't seen it in your adulthood?
No.
I thought you saw it with me in college. I saw it in the dorm room once.
Did I watch it with you? I don't remember if I saw the whole thing.
Maybe he was like there, but he wasn't there, you know? He was in the room, but he wasn't watching.
Yeah. And so like I've always loved like the Ghibli aesthetic.
Yes.
And like the animation style and the like how unique it is to that studio, how unique it is to Miyazaki. And so it frustrates me when people do like doing this new thing now with ChatGPT where they're making Studio Ghibli style edits of pre-existing pictures because they don't look good.
They don't
like at all.
It's so interesting because we decided to do this even before the AI trend started.
Yes. Yeah.
So it just kind of lined up. We're being very topical. Seeing all these AI images and then comparing it to actual Ghibli, actual Miyazaki, for anyone who cares, you can immediately tell the difference. But not even the soul. It's just not good. It's just what AI does. It's like, lightly drawn with big eyes. And like, that's kind of it. They don't do the backgrounds well. They don't actually even draw the humans that well. They're like weirdly chibi, which is not Ghibli at all. It's just odd. And it makes me so sad when people do, because I care about media. I just do. Even if I don't like it, before you came on the show, Kayla, we had a Euphoria episode and I spent an hour and a half ranting. Even when I don't like it, I care.
Right.
So to see people be like, this looks like Ponyo, and like not care, I'm kind of like, ugh.
Yeah.
My thing is, I have seen some that look pretty close because you can obviously pay to have like the more advanced versions and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But the thing that bothers me, number one, is that AI is just absorbing all the images that it's seen online of Studio Ghibli and then regurgitating them to be whatever you want. So there's no artist intent behind it. Obviously, we know this. This is the whole fight with AI to begin with. But what's crazy to me is when people are like, I made this. Making it sound like I created this with my own two hands and a tablet. And I'm like, that's AI generated. I know the app you used. It's the one that has the four quadrants where it's like Disney art, Pixar art, Ghibli art, some other fourth thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks bad. Like, it just looks bad. And you're just like, you're claiming the art to be your own and it's not.
Yes.
What's his name? It's Baby No Money. He came out with a contest recently for people to cosplay as him. And then a lot of people were also doing fan art of the people who were dressed as him, but they were doing a lot in AI. And he stood up the other day and he goes, AI art's trash. It's going to only be real artists. And I'm going to actually commission ones that you want so that we can all like do this together. And he's like supporting artists who are actually drawing his cosplay contest. And it's really cool. And a lot of people are mad at him because they're like, but I worked really hard on editing it and doodly doo. And it's like,
no. You pushed three buttons.
You literally put Baby No Money, Hatsune Miku, cute. And then you made him. And it's not the same.
It's not the same, like at all. And so to your point, though, like the types of images, the Studio Ghibli style images that are being like churned out, it's not necessarily in that style. It's like a it's a more cartoonish, if anything. It's like more like Craig Anderson.
Craig of the Creek.
They're more like Craig of the Creek, yeah. They're more like Craig of the Creek characters.
It's bobbleheady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that, it's that, you know, the whole argument in animation about like bean mouth, big eyes. It's exactly what that is.
The Cal Arts style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Adventure Time, Steven Universe. Yeah.
That's what it's more akin to. To me.
Also,
and then like the type of like tint and filter on it makes it kind of give off the impression that it's like a Ghibli type of vibe, but
not even because Ghibli's so colorful and all these AI images have like a sepia tone. It's like the weirdest. Like again, people don't care. They don't see. They don't watch. Y'all not listening. Y'all not listening.
It's hard though, because here's the thing. Like as an artist, right? It pains me when people think the very common phrase of, oh, I could do that, right? Like when the dude a couple years ago in Art Basel taped a banana to a wall and everyone was like, I could do that. And it's like, yes, you could.
But you didn't.
And he put in the work and he thought up this concept and he did it and blah, blah, blah. When you are creating art, especially like if you're copying an art style, right? Like any other artist who would copy, even if it's not good, copy a Studio Ghibli art style and then sell it or post it online, gets taken down by the website that you put it on for violating copyright rights. But AIs don't get in trouble to do that. So people can continue to regurgitate these same drawings out with AI, post it as if it's their own art, not get in trouble because it's made by AI and not them, because technically the image is made by pre-existing images. And then the other artists are suffering in the background going, well, I wanted to do a Disney style of this princess, or I wanted to do a Ghibli style of my, you know, D&D character, blah, blah, blah. And then they get in trouble.
Right.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
And the worst part of it all, some of these, because everything has to get political. And a lot of these people who are posting these AI images are grifters. I'll just leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they post these things to push buttons. Someone made a Ghibli style of the picture of James Franco on the noose from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes.
Where he says, is this your first time? Mm. And then like the tweet was like, all the graphic designers freaking out, editors, because there was this thing like 2 years ago where it's like AI is going to replace editors, and then it didn't. But the noose wasn't even around James Franco's neck. It like molded into the noose next to him, and it doesn't look good, and he posted it anyway. It's like he did it on purpose. Yeah. He knows it looks bad. He knows it looks bad, but he was like, yeah,
dude, fucking Nav and somebody, Nav posted a cover art for a single he's dropping in the Ghibli style. The motherfucker has six fingers.
Oh.
Like he's like doing this, but there's an extra, like he has another finger here. So it's like,
it's crazy to me how AI can't understand hands and eyes properly a lot of the time.
It's insane.
Two things that actual artists have a really hard time drawing.
Yeah.
It's learning just like the rest of us. But yeah, I feel bad because I know that some people, they genuinely want to use AI art to be like, look, I'm an artist, I'm trying. And I'm like, to those people, if you're one of them, I understand you wanting to skip a few steps and be a really great artist. But the beauty of being an artist is the steps that take you to being good.
Yeah.
So take the time to practice, learn online, go to art school. I did it. And do it.
Yeah. But also the quest to be a better artist, you kind of take that away from yourself.
Yes.
Because everything that you churn out through that generator is going to look exactly like the next dude doing the same thing. Exactly. You haven't really developed your own like style. Artistic style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
You can't call, I mean.
You're robbing yourself of the experience to create something actually brand new and worthwhile.
Personal to you, yeah. That's yes. Your own type of brand, own type of style. Like Miyazaki didn't get to the style, the painstaking style that he had just by churning out images or suggestions into a prompt, into a generator that produces an image, right? Like he had to go through, those people had to go through and draw that. Like that was like a concept that he thought up.
Yep.
So, yeah.
I know before the podcast, I said, I was like, do we want to get really political? But I just have to.
Yeah.
I have to bring this up because I thought about this and it's been bothering me ever since. Mm. So many people. And you know what? Fucking Asmongold. Fucking dirty ass, tooth blood on the wall Asmongold. He said something like, oh, graphic designers, this is pretty bad. Like, this has been a bad week for you. Go be a plumber or something.
Wow, that's extremely rude.
Where was this sentiment when we were kids in the late 2000s where South Park was making fun of you guys for being like, oh, the immigrants are taking our jobs. But now robots are taking people's jobs and you're fine with it, right? Huh? What the fuck is going on now?
Right. Number one, he's being insulting because he's crushing someone's dream. But number two, he's also insulting plumbers who make a lot of money.
A lot of fucking money.
Make a lot of money. If you got the strength, shoot, I should have gone and been a plumber. I totally understand. But it's or a garbage man. They make a lot of money too. But we were always promised as kids that, you know, artificial intelligence has been around for so long, right? And we were always promised as kids that, like, oh, it's going to do the jobs that people don't want to do so that people can create and do the good things that we put into the world. But every single mass company that's building AI is focusing on, oh, we're going to get an AI to write an original book. We're going to get AI to write a symphony. We're going to get it. Stop teaching it to do those things. Have AI do my taxes good and well and pull in all the information from the internet so I don't have to go to TurboTax to give them an extra $69 when I, like, it's so annoying. I can't stand tax companies. Why are you charging me money when the money, I don't know why I have to give you anything? Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Y'all use TurboTax?
I used to use TurboTax. I know. I used to, and it used to let you do, like, the free one all the way through, and now it doesn't. So you're telling me on top of the money I owe the government, you're going to make me pay another mummy? No. Actually, burn in a hole. Burn a hole to ashes. I spit on your grave. Oh, makes you so angry. Boy. But yes, that's what it should be learning to do so that even the tax people can be set free and go and touch grass and feel joy, because you cannot feel joy in that job. You can't. I cannot believe that you can. Oh, okay. I didn't think I was going to scream this early.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. It's all the Diet Coke.
I would love to see Miyazaki's take on all this, because I know he's pissed.
I know he's upset.
I know he's not even. I'm sure that man is ignoring it. He's like, ew, gross, tomato, tomato, tomato.
He had like a quote like a while back. It was like AI is like a plague or some shit like that. Like he said,
I'll look right now.
It's he said because he's super dramatic. He was like, this is a he was a plague on humanity or some shit.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Hold up, Miyazaki talking about AI.
What does he say?
He says it is just a machine churning out soulless. I can't say this word. Algorithmic beauty, art without a soul, an insult to life itself.
That's an insult to life itself.
An insult to life.
So dramatic. What the fuck?
He's so baby girl. Is it? Well, Junji Ito is very baby girl coded, but like it's very that Miyazaki is just an art, like a classic artist, where it's like, the world is burning and dying, and I am here but a witness. Mm-hmm. Look upon my art and also be sad, fellow people. And then the people who get it get it, and the people who don't, and that's fine.
Yeah,
I guess.
Okay, so we've talked about AI for 25 minutes. We haven't even gotten into Princess Mononoke.
It was good. I think we spent a good amount of time.
Yeah. Yes, I think it was necessary because it's topical. Like, because we're talking about Miyazaki movies, we have to talk about the AI issue.
Yeah.
So, going actually into Princess Mononoke, since for Kayla, I'll start with you.
Oh.
What are your initial thoughts on the movie? Because you saw it in IMAX. I kind of wanted to get your idea on like how you thought that experience was. Like, don't spoil anything yet, because we have other stuff we want to get into.
Yeah.
But like, as far as initial thoughts on how you felt about the movie, like, what do you think?
So I've seen Princess Mononoke several times, and typically it's been either from my phone on a long trip or online, and it's on a small screen through my headphones. And it was always good. It's up there. Seeing it in IMAX and hearing the score and seeing the art on such a big screen moved me more than seeing it before. Like, I had never cried watching Princess Mononoke before I saw it again in IMAX. I cried probably the last 15 minutes of the movie, and then a little bit after the credits were rolling. I needed a second. It's very powerful, and everyone in the theater, I think, knew that because we were all so attentive, and we, like, there wasn't a phone out in sight. No one talked. It's almost like it almost is like, what's that word I'm looking for? That starts like an R. It's like we're giving like reverence to the movie. Like, it's weird. It's very important for the world. And that is what I will say.
Zoe, what are your, I guess, initial thoughts about it?
So my journey with Miyazaki, I think it usually 95%. It usually starts with Spirited Away for most people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then after that, I just saw like random ones. Because I feel like the big three are Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, and Mononoke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But then like after that, I saw Porco Rosso, which is great. Castle in the Sky, which is cute. Saw The Boy and the Heron when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Ponyo is one of my favorites. And what'd I say? I said it was going to be an ad. I tried to make it cute.
I started looking behind you. I was like, happy back there.
I tried to make for it our, cute.
For our audio listeners, Zoe was playing like anime, like something in the background. And he's like, before we start recording, he was like, I know as I'm talking, there's going to be ads in the background for this.
That's fine. It's fine. And it would be when I'm talking, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
What was
that?
No,
you gotta turn that off. It's so distracting.
It'll be off in a second. Dude. I need to skip it in 7 seconds.
I'll just stare at Taylor until it's done. Because if I look at that screen, I'm like,
yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
So I'd never seen Mononoke, and I saw it for the first time yesterday. And, like, immediately, it ended really late. So my Letterboxd review for it was just, holy shit. I did not know at all what this movie was about.
Oh, what did you rate it?
4.5. 9 out of 10. I did not know what this movie was about. I had seen The Demon Pig before.
Yeah.
But that's it. I thought the main character was going to be San, which is not even... I thought she was... Her name was Princess Mononoke, which I guess, but like, whatever.
I mean, the villagers call her that.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
That's not what her actual name is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's so interesting because it's from 1997. Mm-hmm. But it looks still so good.
Crispy.
The animation is incredible. And it is like, it has the skeleton of a Miyazaki movie, right? It's like about the environment. Little guys. Because every Miyazaki movie has to have little guys.
A little guy.
A man who could be mistaken as a woman. It's just... But I feel like this one... They kind of dipped into their bag when it came to like the action. This one had a lot of fighting in it.
Yes.
But it was so... You can see... At least for someone like me, like this was the inspiration for movies like Avatar by James Cameron.
Yeah. But
also the other Avatar when it came to like the Forbidden Forest and the spirits and gods, that to me felt like The Last Airbender when they talk about their spirit realm and their gods and their, you know, the forest god is a fucking guy with a human face. And I forgot the name of the face taker in The Last Airbender.
Oh, I forget his name all the time.
But
yeah, that worm thing with the mask.
Yes, you can see how this mm-hmm. has inspired so many people. Yep. And I go looking it up and I see what like the Wikipedia says about this movie. This movie made Miyazaki it contributed to his status in Japanese society as a bunkajin. And a bunkajin, it translates into literary beauty, but a bunjakin is like a cultured person. It made everyone in Japan be like, this motherfucker,
he's thinking, his thoughts have been thunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, it's, you know, I really enjoy Miyazaki as a filmmaker, but this movie, I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Like it jumped to like top three for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me, like I started saying, like my Ghibli movie experience is not super, it has been limited, I guess, just to only seeing Spirited Away 1.5 times, I guess, because I don't remember seeing it the second time in college. Same thing I'll say with like with Zoe is just the landscape set pieces coupled with the soundtrack. Like, do you know that like that scene in Ghost of Tsushima where you're like riding through the horse through like the pasture and like the title kind of pops up? I had the exact same feeling. Like where it was just like that where what is his name? The prince. I wrote it down. What is his name? Ishitaka.
Ishitaka.
Or Ashitaka, whichever one. Ishitaka is like running with Yakul, his red deer, like through like the like these areas to like head back to his village. And it's just like these wide landscapes where like the wind's blowing the grass and the soundtrack just like puts it all together. And it's just, like opening up the movie like that is awesome. And it's just, it elicits like a really, really, nice feeling. And I'll say that like going back, I wish I would have watched it in Japanese too, which I would have tried to watch it in Japanese first. That's my initial thought, because of the fact that Max only kind of allows you to watch it in the English version. Mm-hmm. Which I'm not complaining about, because the dub is not bad. I think Keith David does a phenomenal job in his role. And there's a couple other like notable voices that I don't know the names of, but like they have voiced other popular anime and other popular shows that I just think that like Like the cast was well put together. I do think giving Lady Eboshi a British accent was insane, though.
Yeah, she was the only British thing
I didn't really like. Is giving her a British accent was crazy.
I forgot that part.
It's really interesting because she's played by Minnie Driver, which is a great actress, and Jigo Jigo is played by Billy Bob Thornton, which is a great actor. But this Japanese movie set
in Japan
it is fantastical, but it is a specific period in Japanese history. It's not the Edo period. It's the Emishi period? No.
I'm pretty sure it's
Mumomachi period. I definitely butchered that. And to have Billy Bob Thornton's country ass be like we're gonna hunt the spirit of the forest, like, it is a little odd.
Even though
he did good, it's just
his
inflection does not fit.
No,
right. The one thing that the English dub has over the Japanese original version, I think, is I don't mind it at all, but San's wolf mother in English is voiced by a woman with a very low voice. Mm. But in Japanese, all the spirits have pretty male sounding voices, if not completely male. Which I don't mind that, because it's very just like these spirits have no gender truly. Like, they're just, it is what it is. But I do really like the English voice actor for the wolf.
Yes, and that's a great segue for the characters. I do want to get into some of our favorite characters. I love so another. You might as well turn that TV off. Another ad playing behind you.
Another ad.
Yeah.
I was trying to be nice.
This isn't free advertisement.
But I liked Prince Ishitaka. I thought he was a good character. You should put your hand in front of the ad.
For now.
That's so funny.
I have an idea. Good.
But yeah, like I liked him as a character. I thought he was great. I liked San. I thought she was good. I thought she was a good character. I wish the movie would have explored her a little bit more in terms of her her thought processes, in terms of like her approach to humans. Cause obviously, like, by the end of the movie, she still doesn't like, that's one thing I did. I did like the fact that at the end of the movie, it didn't have this like handholdy Barney type of vibe where they're like, oh, I like humans now. It gets together. It's like, no, it's still fuck y'all.
Yep. She's like, I like you.
You specifically.
We're married. You can come visit me in the woods. Yeah. I ain't going over there. They suck. Yeah, but I love that. I love it so much.
I do wish that they explored the fact that she is a human a little bit more.
Uh-huh. And, sorry, the one thing that exchange is that how do you say his name again?
Ashitaka.
Ashitaka
doesn't try to force her to come over.
No.
He's like, he literally offers. He goes, we'll make it work. I'll go to the woods. Because he's like, I have work to do here with humans, because they're the problem.
Yeah.
And you go do your thing, because obviously the spirits of the forest are going to need guidance and blah, blah, blah. I love communicative, understanding, independent characters.
To add to that, it's very interesting. Obviously, this movie has to do with the environment and environmentalism. But something that jumped out at people, reviewers, when this movie came out, was how feminist it is.
Yes.
And it's, and I know people get annoyed at that word now because online, but it's like, Miyazaki gives the women character.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
He just makes them human beings.
And they work hard to, as the men hunt, who makes their hunting equipment? The women. And they're not like, oh, we're forced to. It's actually cool. Lady Eboshi takes them, saves them from brothels. Yep. And even Jigo was like, oh, yes, you did a good job. They would be wasted at a brothel. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Kayla, do you have something?
This is my favorite thing. One of my favorite things to talk about this movie. So obviously in Ghibli movies, there isn't typically one villain that's clear and on the open. There's like several villains that are happening simultaneously, right? And in the beginning, you would think that Lady Eboshi is the villain because she's the one bringing guns, starting a village. She's the one that killed the boar that ended up cursing our main guy. So you're like, obviously, you're the only villain in the story. But then you see that that human beings can carry more than one thing, right? And she's like, I have to conquer this land so that I can make a better life for people that I think are worthy. A lot of those being women that have been trapped in sex work against their will and other slavery, and then give them a place in society. I will create that. But she's doing it the wrong way. So like,
yes,
she's made strides for human beings and women, but she's not understanding like the bigger picture that if you don't watch out for this other evil, which is greed, which is at the end of the day what it is, you'll still fall. Your people will fall. You ain't gonna make it. And I'm sorry if you guys hear the rain. It's real loud.
Oh wow, that's rain?
That's rain.
I mean it's
I haven't been able to hear it.
I could hear it a little. It's not distracting, but it's so interesting. Crazy. It's funny because Kayla and I live pretty close to each other.
Yeah.
And it's not raining here.
No,
That's a Florida thing. That's such a Florida thing.
Down. Like, literally, if I showed you guys a photo, it just looks white outside my window from how much rain is coming down and how much light's being reflected. So like, I can't see past the building in front of me.
That's insane. I know where Kayla lives according to my house.
Yeah.
I'm just directionally gifted. And as I look towards Kayla's house,
to the east,
it is actually to the south.
Yeah, I don't know direction.
Nothing. It's like a little gray.
Right.
But it's raining. It's really funny.
Yeah.
It's to the east.
Over here. Yeah.
I have a gift for you.
For you. One more gift. But yeah, I think it's something that Miyazaki does so well. He's like, I'm going to show you that people are multifaceted.
Yep.
And that it's not necessarily that they're wrong. It's that we must be redirected because she was doing a lot of good, even though she was doing a lot of bad.
Yeah. With even to like the people that had leprosy, like giving them a job of actually making the guns and stuff like that.
And them telling the prince, they're like, please be kind to her. She makes us feel human. Like, she's the only one who even talks to us. And I'm like,
Yeah, exactly. Wait, so then it flips, and I love Moro, San's mother, like the wolf spirit.
Yes.
Because it's funny, you're supposed to like, she's supposed to be used as this like weird like foil to bounce off of like San and Ashitaka.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if this is maybe like an intention, but I feel like Moros possesses a character you're not supposed to like at all. Like, because of the fact that like she, like San, just has this utter disdain for humans, right? Yeah. And you could kind of see her as this kind of like buffer between the romance between San and Ashitaka that you kind of want as like the viewer watching. Mm. But like when you see her communicate with Ashitaka and talk to him, like you can tell that it's a situation where she still does not like his kind and still treats him as such. But like, there's still that hint of like, I respect you for what you're trying to do.
Yes.
But I do think it's so funny that last conversation they had when he came out of the cave and she was like, you can jump, nobody would care.
Right.
I was like, that's crazy.
But then before they go to war, before the boars go to war, Moro's like, son, you can leave now. You have a life outside of this. There is a life. I think the line is, you have a life with him.
Yep.
Because she's still, at the end of the day, a mother who loves her child. Oh, and that part where she tells Ashitaka, she's like, I love my as she calls her, like, beautifully tragic or beautifully ugly.
Beautifully ugly.
Mm-hmm. My beautifully ugly child. I cried at that point. Yes, I did, without shame. Because oh, my God. It's just, like, she hates humans so much. But through her love for her child, because they threw San at Moro, at the people that left her behind, threw her to distract Moro and run away. And she was like, humans are so evil to leave a baby behind, so I will raise her. And she, like, loves her, even though she hates him. Ah, it's so good.
That's, well, she loves San so much that she is, like, willingly, what's the word? Delusional about it. Yeah. She tell, because Ashitaka's like, hey, she's human. And she tells him, she's neither wolf nor human. She's something else.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but she doesn't say it because she believes it. She's saying it because, like, she has to.
Yeah.
She's choosing to be delusional.
Yes. In order to love her child, she is believing that San is some other third thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? For
sure.
The rain is falling.
Aha.
It's moving north.
That's crazy. Florida's crazy.
Yeah. So Zoe, I kind of hear it now. Zoe, are there any, like, specific characters that you genuinely liked over the course of the movie?
Well, I thought Ashitaka was cool. He's very he is, because I always got to bring it up, he is what Persona wants you to feel like, where everyone kind of likes you, it's not like, it's not weird. It's not like a, oh my God, you're the best guy ever. It's just because he is just.
He has that air about him.
Yes. Yeah. He is a prince, and he thinks a certain different way. Yeah. And people don't, like, when they first meet him, it's like they don't want to like him, but he wins them over because of how he is.
Yeah. Yes. Yep.
And
I love when the women are like, he's like, they're like, oh, you actually came to, like, go help out in the area where they, like, pump the water or the fire to make, they pump
the fire.
The fire.
Yeah.
And all of them, well, you see, they're sitting down. It's just women in there. So they're, like, chilling, and then and parts of their chest are out. And then, like, oh, he's coming in. And they're like,
covering
they're
up.
Like, oh, you're fixing yourself up for him. They're like, no. And it's just like them covering up. And it's like a small little detail, but it's like, that's so real. That's so cute.
It is crazy. Like, he walks in and was just like, yeah, I'm going to just help out. I was like, yo.
He was just like, stressed. He doesn't care. He's like, I got to do hard labor because I want to kill that woman.
Oh, man.
I get, you got to cure yourself from the curse.
Yeah.
But it was so cool. It made him so strong. Bro, I jumped up when he shoots the guy's sword and it takes the guy's arms off.
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck?
Dude, awesome. He catches the other person's arrow, puts it in his, knocks his own bow, and then shoots somebody's head off. I was like,
yes. Yeah.
I was like, dude, I said, fuck trying to reverse the curse, bro. You need to keep that shit on. Like, that's crazy.
That's what I'm saying. And then, like, you could see it kind of manifest the hatred, like, around him as, like, an energy. Another inspiration, another thing it inspired, Zelda Tears of the Kingdom with the cursed arm and all that.
Yeah.
Very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You can see the influence.
It's interesting. So I know you guys touched on environmentalism as a theme. And honestly, like, that's just like, it's heavy handed, but, like, in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, it's just, like, the whole crux of the thing is, like, humans destroying the earth, or destroying nature for capital gain. I guess I would,
you know, teaching moment. Heavy handed means a little clumsy. I would say the themes are heavy.
Heavy.
Okay. Heavy-handed, yes. Would be The Electric State. Don't even get me fucking started on that movie.
Okay.
And with that, I have to pee. Hold on. I'm just okay. you guys talk about that for a second.
That movie.
I guess in my interpretation of like what I mean by heavy-handed is like it's like in your face. Like it's like that is the theme. Like if you don't get the theme, then you're just a dumb. You know?
Yeah. Heavy-handed means, you know, a little clumsy, and I used that recently because I saw The Electric State. The original book is just about how humans will be very reliant on technology, and if we keep continuing that way, it could be bad. The Russo fucking brothers decided to take that and turn it into a, what I said in my review, heavy-handed allegory for racism. Which is not... We don't need a racism story about robots. That's not what we need.
No.
We've had so many racism stories for the past 5 years. We get to a point where AI is so prevalent in our lives right now that you could... But no. Oh, actually, humans don't like robots. And humans have civil war with robots, which is not what fucking happened in the book. It was so annoying.
Yeah, that's bad.
Also, the cast, they had so many fucking famous people, and bro, Coleman Domingo's in it for 2 minutes, and it's just his fucking voice. How the fuck do you cast Coleman Domingo in your movie and you don't use him?
Is he a robot?
It's humans wear this thing where they can be at two places at once, and you are basically controlling a robot. So instead of Coleman Domingo going to get something by himself, it's his robot thing that he's controlling, so you could barely hear his voice, barely see his face.
Oh my god.
And then that's it.
That's so dumb.
It's so dumb.
That's super dumb.
It was such a bad movie.
Yeah. trying to think. Yeah, so I mean, I guess like the environmentalism theme is literally just like
in your face. Yeah.
Like with obviously the like Mother Nature being the forest spirit, and like pollution and deforestation being the negative or demonic type of energy that is like sweeping through nature, like sweeping through that forest, like because humans decided to put all this effort into getting rid of the wildlife, like taking up all the resources, all that kind of stuff. And one thing I thought was cool is the fact that you don't ever see what the emperor looks like. But he's always like the crux of the issue, especially with Jigo, right? Where he's like, they mentioned it earlier, like, oh, if you take the head of the forest spirit, like the emperor has this weird notion that if you take the head of the forest spirit, he's going to be able to be immortal, and he's going to be able to like to conquer the lands and stuff like that. Welcome back, Kayla.
Thank you.
I was saying that in the theme of environmentalism for Princess Mononoke.
Yes.
I like that they didn't ever reveal what the emperor looked like or give him any lines.
Yep.
And like, kind of as this like, not necessarily a metaphor, but like the notion that these, this not hidden force, but this like driving force that's usually unseen, that's making all of these other people do the evil work that they want to have happen, and so they can kind of like in essence wipe their hands clean of any wrongdoing, because all they're doing is sending out these grunt people to kind of do their work for them. And just like, I don't know, I thought that was like a cool like idea, especially because I liked Jigo at first when we first met him, but I was like, bro, what the fuck?
Yeah,
you betrayed my trust.
But what I like about Jigo is at the end of the movie, when all is said and done and the forest grows back, he's sitting there on a rock and he goes, I give up. How I took that, and you know, it could be, maybe Miyazaki didn't write him this way, it wasn't on purpose, but the way I took that was, he isn't evil, he's just trying to make it in the economy or in the government in that he was put in.
He's very just part of the system.
Part of the system, and you know, he takes a little bit of pride in doing what he does, so he's not the greatest person, but you know, I saw a movie recently, Death of a Unicorn, where like Paul Rudd plays someone very similar, where he doesn't like the fucking drug company he works for, but he's trying to make it high enough because his wife died and he's trying to provide for his family. It's like one of those. It's like, yeah, maybe I don't believe in that. I don't agree with you, but it's, you know, it's real. Like, people do think like that.
Yeah. I mean, even like somebody like Lady Eboshi and like linking up with Jigo, like, you can tell that so it's funny, like, with the layers to characters that you mentioned earlier, Kayla, like, you see her as this savior to these people for a good chunk of the movie, but you also know that she's not a good person, right?
Yep.
It comes to a head when that other group of samurais goes and attacks Iron Town, and instead of her going, those are my people, I need to turn around and save them, she's like, I've done all I could for them, they can fare for themselves. Ma'am, are you serious?
Right.
Like, in essence, she's not wrong, because the people that she's helped and cultivated can fend for themselves. They can.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, you'd rather go through with this plan that has detrimental consequences at the expense of just hoping that your village is going to be there when you get back.
Mm. Yep.
You know, I thought that was
the,
like,
whole
crazy
point of you doing this in the first place, being the village and the people. But that's what it's showing you. At the end of the day, yes, she did so many good things for that town, for those people. She created jobs. She stimulated the economy. But at the end of the day, she was like, I want power. And I want the money that comes with this. I want the land that gives me the money, that gives me the power to give me control. And that is where evil comes from. It's always greed, and it's always like control of things. And a lot of spirits in movies of Studio Ghibli are never just, they don't live like in like a, this is always this way. Even the deer god, he is the god of life and death. And they're like, he decides. We don't even know how he decides. Moro was like, I don't want to go up to him to try to fix me, because if I go to him, he might just kill me, whereas I could live a little longer on my own. And it's kind of like, you run that risk with, you know, an entity in these movies. But that's also just kind of like how you run the risk when you gamble your life away for money, power, etc. Like, at the end of the day, you could still lose everything. So what's the point?
Right.
You know?
Speaking of spirits, the ape spirits were some hoes. I hated them.
The apes were kind of funny.
The ape spirits were some hoes, man. I hated
them. They're just tired of planting the trees every night.
And getting shot at.
They're like, just give us, it's like, just man, give us that just, man.
Like, just give us, we trying to eat some. Just get, like, maybe we can figure something out. Like,
yeah.
They're like, oh, this is, but I just love, like, it's when Moro is, like, I think it's Moro's either close to dying. No, when Okubo is close to dying. And they're, like, throwing the sticks and stones, like, down from above. Like, this is your fault. You did this. I was like, bro, what have y'all been doing?
Planting.
Nothing. Besides planting. But, like, y'all haven't even, like, they're just, I do like them, though, because they're, like, the, you know, when it comes to like dire situations, there's always that one person that's like, that doesn't want to do anything, but it's also like, how could this possibly happen to us? Like, this is all your fault. Like, this is a problem. Yeah. They're just kind of like letting stuff happen, but complaining about it along the way.
Yeah.
So I thought they were interested. They were an interesting dynamic to like the other spirit, but they were some hoes. I couldn't.
They are funny. They're kind of like the people who have a lot to say about the environment, but then don't do much to help it. Like,
and they try to find a way, like a easier right. way to just
to fix it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A way. And there is no, and we understand there is no easy way to fix what is currently broken. Right. In our system, like even recycling that we do, like all the, even if we do our very best, there is a consequence at one end of the, you know, of the spectrum when you're trying to do like one good thing, but it's kind of the apathy of just like, oh, well, today I drank out of my metal straw, so I have a different air about me. I'm better, that sort of thing. That's, and that's kind of their out. They were like, oh, I'll just eat man. Problem solved.
Gain man power.
Gain man
solved.
Power. No, get shot. And then that's that.
Okay, so one thing I did want to talk about, in terms of like, I wrote down in our like structure of the episode, I was like, anything that we would change or things we didn't like. I don't think there's anything in this movie that I could be like, oh, I don't like that. Like, I do. At one point, I thought it was gonna be a situation where like there was gonna be like a no happy ending type thing where the forest just dies. And like the movie ends with a somber, like, we're going to try to fix it and bring it all back. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was going to be the message, but like the spirit came back when they gave him the head. Oh, I will say this though. I wish that, San and Prince Ashitaka, should have like turned into new forest spirits after they gave the head back to the forest spirit, instead of like a situation where they just give the head back and their curse is gone. Like, there was no real like super concrete way of saying, oh yeah, like this is how you get rid of the curse. It was just a situation where, yeah, it's gonna kill you, but then them giving the head back to the forest spirit and the forest spirit like coming through, I guess in a way, like the forest spirit like getting into the,
I mean,
like,
Eboshi
cleansing things kind of made
Eboshi
thing, kind of
also says like it could cure anything, and it did cure the lepers at the end.
It did.
When the crowd is in the water,
yeah,
the guy he saves in the beginning is talking, but if you look in the background, the lepers, their bandages, yeah, are gone, and they're going like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also that I'm glad that it just took away the curse, because the work that we have to do as humans, what the dear God, or this is how I'm interpreting it, it's like, I cannot make you a god to live forever to try to fix what can be done, because people don't care about gods because we live so long. You have to do the work in the time you're allotted as a human. That's what it means to be alive. That's how I took it, which is also why I cried the last 15 minutes of the movie. And I'll keep saying it. Because there, I can hear the rain now on your side. That's crazy. But yeah, that is, everything is finite. And that's beautiful, but it's also really painful. And that's why I started crying when the boar god, because he's blind and he just smells the skins of his warriors.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you guys are back from the dead. We're gonna do this together. We're going to be together. And he doesn't care how it's done. He's like, I don't care if you guys are just like spirits at this point. Like, I just don't want to be alone. Right? Like, I'd be the last one. That's it.
Yeah.
And
Keith
we have
David
this
job part,
to
man.
Do. Oh, my God. God,
Keith
that
David
part
killed
is
that
so
part, man.
Painful. It's so absolutely mortifying. Oh, I can't go
yeah,
through
the
it
way,
again.
the way I took it was the spirit of the forest having the face of a human.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, to me, at least in that world, it's like, okay, we all come from one place. Humans and nature.
Yeah.
And this is the guy that's protecting everybody.
Yeah.
And then, you know, greed kills him.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason why there's no new spirit is basically him saying, like, I'm tired. Yep. You guys handle it.
Yeah, figure it out.
Not,
yeah.
Like, okay, it can't be just me. Now it's both humans and animals. Y'all have to coexist.
Yes, but that's also the line that I put in my review. It's my favorite line from the movie. It's San says, even if all the trees go back, it won't be his forest anymore. The forest spirit is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ashitaka responds and he goes, never. He is life itself. He isn't dead, San. And it's that he may not be alive in the same way. He doesn't have a physical presence anymore. But just like the little forest spirits, when they appear when the forest is healthy, he is the forest. He is growing. And who knows if he'll have a physical form again someday. It's just like, this is just how it has to be right now. Like, I'm taking a step back and y'all got to do the work.
And from a religious standpoint, he could be Jesus.
Could be Jesus.
Jesus died, but he's not yet. The spirit of the Lord is here. You know?
I mean.
Miyazaki could have gotten inspiration from that, you know?
I mean, it's not a too far off parallel, too. Like, just kind of having that godlike being, like, I guess, amongst sacrificing himself through the sins of humans to make the world better.
Yep, and saying you have to do the work.
You
got to
figure it out.
I'm gonna leave you my spirit, but you got to do the work.
Can I just say that the forest spirit is nightmare fuel?
Yes,
he's terrifying.
He's scary. Biblically accurate forest spirit.
Biblically accurate forest spirit, but also so insanely powerful that when the movie just goes completely silent, it is so unnerving.
Yes.
It is so scary. And I always think about, like, you know, people who have said that they've had, like, actual experiences, like, with angels, like, in current times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're like, angels aren't these little cutie woody figures. People always are like, angels are terrifying and you feel a presence. And then that's it. And it gave that vibe of, like, this is something that if I spoke out of turn, I'm going to die. I have to shut up. And when it happened in the theater, because it's such a vast difference between the sounds of nature and the music in the back to when, like, he's literally walking on water.
Yeah.
I held my breath, like, when you pass a cemetery. I was like...
Yeah.
And I waited.
Like, what's so funny, though, is he's in the water. Like, he's in the water. Mm-hmm. Like, walking on the sand. And then he just goes, nah. I'm going to stun y'all real quick.
Yes, like, he starts walking on it. And when he gets shot in the head,
I don't think y'all feeling me.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you guys noticed. But when he gets shot through the head, there's a moment where he dips. No, but his foot dips into the water.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
like, some of that divinity is, like, gone. And then his eyes do the spread thing. And then they go back. And then he's up on the water again. I was like,
insane. Also, the tree spirits are also nightmare fuel. I'm sorry.
I don't think Kayla. So.
No, I love them. And they're beautiful. And they're funny. Clickety clackety heads.
They're funny. Clickety
clackety.
They're creepy. Telling me if you were in the forest and you saw one of them little white motherfuckers just twisting their head and shit, you wouldn't be scared?
They're silly, goofy. They just want to hang out.
I think they're funny.
I think that their head shapes, like, they're where their eyes are. I can understand seeing a spirit like that would make you freak out, which the regular villagers did.
Yeah.
But knowing what they are, which is just a symbol of health in the forest, I'm like, I want to make a bunch of them now and put them in all of my plants, and they can make my plants healthy. I love the little clicky clack sounds.
Yeah, they were a little unnerving to me at first, but then obviously, like, as you watch, you kind of understand what they're for.
Yeah.
You start to kind of be a little more comfortable with them, which, like, the villagers that walking through are. And even, like, you told before we started recording, you were just like, well, like, they were cute when they were, like, making fun, like, joking at Ishitaka for carrying one of the villagers on his back, and they were doing it themselves and, like, walking past him. And I was like, okay, yeah, it's cute. But it is like, cute. I just think that they are kind of, like, unnerving at first.
Of all the Studio Ghibli little guys, they're not the cutest little guys. Like, a Soot Sprite is adorable, and the washi washi inherent, they're just little fat little babies, and so, like, I get it. Compared to that, it's nightmare, but it's still good, still cute.
Yeah. I think this one seems a little less mystical than the other Miyazaki movies, if I'm like, from obviously, like, Porco Rosso is not really super mystical. But I'm talking about, like, some of the other ones. Like, Spirited Away is, like, super just, like, out there. Howl's Moving Castle is super out there. Ponyo is super out there. You know what I'm saying? Like, stuff like that. Like, yeah, I think it's...
This one is definitely more rooted in a world similar to Earth.
Yeah.
But it still has its mysticism. And to me... And the reason why I equate it so much to The Last Airbender, it's that it being so mysterious, you know, it's the same word, mysterious, mystical, like, you don't know, people aren't supposed to be in the Forbidden Forest, and it's like another world, but it's not, it's in Earth.
I'd be living there. Put me in the water. I'm saying.
Yeah, it might not be his most mystical, I feel like it's his most spiritual.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely the most spiritual. Like, it's very clearly, like, it just feels religious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. In a way, a lot of ways it does. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much it. The next one that we will be watching is Castle in the Sky, correct? That's the next we're doing?
I'm down. I have to watch that before. Yep.
Cool. Before we sign off, though, I do want to do some music recommendations.
Yes, you said you wanted to save it till I'm back.
Yeah.
Yes. And in that, with this music recommendation segment, I wanted to specifically talk about John Bellion.
Yeah.
I remember him. I don't know his new work.
Me and Zoe have been listening to John Bellion since 2015, 16. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I've been listening to, like, since The Definition dropped in, like, 2015, 2016. Which is, like, one of his, like, older album mixtape, whatever. And I've been a fan of him for a long time because of his music, but also just, like, who he is as a person. And you can kind of see that through that he used to put out these, like, YouTube video series where he would just, like,
it was, show, like, making show you how of he made the song
songs and his, like, thought process, his artistical vision, like, how his songs start off versus how they finish, and, like, the meaning behind a lot of the songs that he makes and stuff like that. And that just kind of, like, it inspired me a lot. So I've always been a huge fan of him. But he took this super long hiatus off where he was only just, like, writing songs for people.
There was a little joke there because he's John Bellion, JB, and he wrote songs for Justin Bieber, JB, and he wrote songs for the Jonas Brothers, JB. And I was like, oh, what the? And then he started writing songs for everyone else.
Yeah, like, he's written, like, so many songs that have hit, like...
K-pop. He's written K-pop songs.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's written so many that have gone to, like, that have charted really, really, really well. And so, like, every once in a while, you'll see, like, he'll post something about a song he's written making top 100 or whatever. And in my mind, and I'm telling Zell, I'm like, bro, like, he has to make something. It's got to be something else he has coming down the pipeline. And lo and behold, he drops this song called like Kid Again, and super dope. Like, really love the song. But then he got out
of his contract. He didn't want to make music to have the record company own it. And so he just didn't drop anything. And his record company got so angry at him because they were like, you still owe us an album. And he was like, nope. So they were like, fuck it. We don't want you on it.
We're just letting him go.
And as soon as that happened, he started dropping music again.
Yeah.
Good for him.
And so he's come out with Kid Again. And then he just released a new single not too long ago called Wash. And I'll let Zoe continue in a second. It's so good. Well, I'll let Zoe continue in a second, but one of the biggest draws that I like about John Bellion's music is the attention to detail in the production. How like the production just kind of like sticks with you. I can't tell you how many times like I've been just doing random stuff around the house or like driving, and I was like every time, like, or I'll just or like when Watch came out, that little breakdown he has with the regular lyrics, like I'm like, it just sticks with you, like, and it's very very, very good.
Yes, Kayla, I put it on the movie group shared playlist.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I will give it a listen.
It's very, I talked about it with Taylor. It's very reminiscent to, which I think, I don't know if he's born again Christian, but he's very Christian now. Like, he's more out about it.
He's been very open in a lot of his music about his faith in a lot of certain songs.
And this song, to me, feels like a worship song. It's about his wife. He is very much a wife guy.
Love a man who loves his wife.
And so this song feels like a worship song about his wife.
That's beautiful.
It's so good. And fucking touch me 12 ways, sods on the lay, look like a million diamonds. Let it. It's so good. It's so, so good.
So good.
Oasis in my arms, you're my wonderwall. Get the fuck out of here.
He's just I don't know, he's just a fantastic, I think he's a good writer, and he kind of has like a great artistic vision for how he wants his songs to be produced and sung. But I think what his biggest skill set lies in just like how much his production just kind of sticks with you. And so, yeah, I would recommend him so much to so many people if I could. He is one of the many glue parts that stuck our friend group in college together.
That's precious.
We used to watch his music video, like the making of certain songs. Just because we'd go out and some of us would be drunk, and then we come back to the room and they were like, put the fucking video on again.
I love that.
Boy.
I mean, I don't have any new music, but this week I did go ahead and purchase tickets for me and my brother. We are going to go see Ninja Sex Party in concert.
Nice.
And their opener is Tupperware Remix Party, also known as Twerp.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
I haven't seen them since like 2017. And my brother has never seen them. And they're such an experience. Like, the last time that I saw them, it was me and my friends were on the balcony, but there was also general admission that you could go to on like the main floor. And at one point, like, there's two characters. It's Danny Sex Bang and Ninja Sex Brian, or Ninja Brian, not Ninja Sex Brian, Ninja Brian. And all of a sudden, like, one person threw their bra on stage, and Ninja Brian stuffed the bra in his pants. And then there was counted over 100 bras. It just flying over our heads in the balcony. Like, you see, like, waves and waves of bras, and he stuffed them all into his pants, and they were, like, counting it. And Danny had just come from a show in Chicago, and he goes, no, not Miami. I think it was Orlando. He's like, Orlando's different. You guys are crazy. And we were like, yeah, Florida. And it was so much fun. It was so good. And they had previewed their music video, the Danny Did You Know. He was like, I'm going to show this to you guys. Please do not leak it online. I want to be able to show you and trust you. And nobody, not one fan, leaked that video because we are so faithful to Danny and Brian. Like, I don't do anything for them. So I'm so excited to see them again.
Where are you watching them?
In St. Pete.
St. Pete. You might get lucky because they did drop a new Starbomb album. And Starbomb
so Aaron might come. Because Aaron did pop up during my last one, too.
And Aaron's from Florida. And I know whenever they tour, they always go to Disney.
Yes.
Whenever they go to Florida.
Wait, you're so right. I have to go to Disney that whole week because I'm going to catch them and I'm going to kiss them all on the forehead. I love them.
Big Aaron game Hansen grumpers
and
over here.
Danny, if you guys, and Ninja Ryan, if you guys are listening in a very platonic, very I love you way, just let me kiss your forehead. I love you and I just wish you so well. Like, oh!
I hope you get to experience Thunder and Lightning in person because that's my favorite song by them.
It's also that, like, Tupperware Remix Party is like Twerp is so much fun, and when they play with Danny on stage, it's so good. And the main singer, which is the guy with the traffic cone head, he does these super high kicks on stage, and I will come back hoarse that weekend. Mark me words, because I am going to be screaming my head off. I'm
you
so
know
excited.
What?
So that's my
another music another music recommendation.
Ah,
I don't know if you've heard this. Tactile Sensation by Tupperware Remix Party.
I'm featuring
Planet Booty.
Planet Booty.
Dog, what are these artists'
They're
names?
They're so
what
good.
Are we doing?
Bro, that it's a funk song about dancing with a girl. Awesome, super fun. I love it.
Yeah.
And then they're just called Planet Booty, and it's funny. Twerping Planet Booty forever. That's all the
sounds crazy.
I love it. So if you guys, you know, all the listeners, give a listen to Ninja Sex Party or NSP, Tupperware Remix Party, otherwise known as Twerp, John Bellion. Who else? Is that everyone?
That's
Did
it.
Mention everybody? That's it.
Wallows came out with an album.
Wallows is a good album.
The lead dude in
13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why, if you've never heard him. Like, he's in a band, and his band's pretty good.
So. I did not know. But wow, this is the longest episode we've recorded in a while, I feel.
Oh, for sure.
It's because we reunited for the first time in 2 weeks.
And yeah, I'm hungry. Let me eat.
Oh, wait. Yeah. All right. This was very fun.
This was fun. So keep a lookout for part two, where we go into Castle in the Sky. If you have not watched Princess Mononoke, I hope we didn't spoil it too much for you. We want you to go watch it if you haven't. Give us your thoughts. What kind of things did you take from it? What kind of characters you rock with? Did you like Moro or not? Because I know a lot of people are not going to fuck with her. But yeah, y'all got anything else? Are we good?
I'm good.
I really love that movie.
All right, cool. Well, all right. Well, I've been Taylor, a.k.a. Nostalgia, as told by Zoe. K likes everything. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.